Good morning.
Good morning.
That's not coffee. And just as a warning, a heads up, this is really loud. There's something going on down in there, and I'm not quite sure if it's going to try and stop what I'm about to say. But if it does, I guess it does. Then you have reason to be. Thanksgiving, tomorrow. That's our annual celebration. There's a lot going on this time of year. People are trying to get in the mood. You come to this day, and a lot of people really don't know what to do with it. It can be a tough one. It can be a time of celebration too. There's people that really get a lot out of it, and they enjoy the food, of course. They enjoy getting together with family. Some don't. And they enjoy reflecting on what there is to be thankful for. But it can be a confusing one, and I think a lot of how we celebrate this particular festival has been influenced by media, it's been influenced by books and things that have happened over the years since we as a culture started celebrating Thanksgiving. There's always been, in agrarian societies anyway, this need. And you can see where it comes from. When you bring in the harvest, there's something about that. And maybe Thanksgiving is not quite the word, but there's this feeling of fullness, right? If you're a farmer and you've spent your entire summer out in the fields and you've planted and you've watered and you've weeded, and then you've seen things grow. And then you bring that in because you know, especially if you live in this kind of climate, this, what you brought in out of the ground, is going to feed you throughout the winter until the cycle starts again. And if it's successful, there's something about that, right? There's something about working hard and then having something to show for it. It's a little bit different than collecting a paycheck. You just don't quite get the same kind of feeling of fullness, right? You don't feel the need to throw a party and invite all your friends because your friends really had nothing to do with it. Years ago, everybody kind of got together when it came time to pull it in, and everybody depended upon each other. So not only was it individual fulfillment, but it was sort of this group and community involvement. The problem, I think, with the way we celebrate Thanksgiving at this time of year, I think it can be pictured, and we've probably already all been here, right? You're gathered around the table, and there's a lot of feasting, and people are keep passing the turnip around, because not too many people like turnip, right? And so the turkey takes a hit, and so do the mashed potatoes, especially if they have cream cheese in them. But the turnip stands alone. But everybody's eating, right? And the glasses get filled, and it doesn't matter what you have in them. But at some point, this kind of ceremony takes place. Someone says, hey, let us all go around the table, and everybody say what they're thankful for. So in our culture, then we start thinking, this is an issue now. You're like, I knew this was coming. I should have prepared. What am I thankful for, right? And you're going through, what happened this year that I'm really grateful for? Did I get a new job? Did we get a new car? Did we get a new house? New child? What do we have? And I think there's the problem. What do we have? Because this works, sort of. This seems to work in a society and in a culture that has a lot in your hands, right? You can usually find something. And then that's what you're going to present around the table with your raised glass. But the problem is, Thanksgiving really should work for everybody. And there are some people, and perhaps you know some of them, that really don't have a lot, or they have anything at all. My mother-in-law, she's working with seniors in this new business she started, and it's, did that play? We'll get to that in a second. She's working with seniors, and one of the people that she's working with is this 95-year-old man, Polish. He spent some time when he was 24 in a concentration camp. And I often think about people like that and people right now in the Middle East, Christians in particular, who have things going on in their lives. It's not right. They don't have a lot. Anything they had was taken away by somebody else that wanted to do them harm. They've had family taken away. They've had their homes taken away. They've had their possessions taken away. They're running, some of them with only the clothes on their back. And then you say, name one thing that you're grateful for. And in this kind of context, it just doesn't work. And Thanksgiving for us, for our culture, has become that. Where's all our math whizzes? What is that? Here's to help you out. No geometry whizzes? It's a point. It's a point. It's not a circle. It's a fat point, I'll grant you. But a point. And what is it about a point? Do you remember? You know what a point is? It's an infinitesimally small instance in time and or space. Right? That's it. It's a representation of an instant. And that is what Thanksgiving, I think, has become for us. At some point, we're enjoying a meal, the glass gets raised, and somebody says, what are you thankful for? And you spit out something. And that's it. Now, you might be saying, that's not very fair. It's not like it for everybody. I grant you. But when I look at the Bible, I look at how people of the Bible, God's people, how they celebrated, because Thanksgiving is there, and they don't call it Thanksgiving, but it's there. It's interwoven throughout Scripture. It becomes something like this. A vector. And vectors have force, and they have direction. And that totally changes your point, right? Because Thanksgiving, when you look in Scripture, is always directed towards one direction. One direction. Guess. Good old Sunday school answer. Directed towards God, always, always, always in Scripture. Thanksgiving is directed towards God. And it's got force. And you read especially the Psalms, and it's just full. It's full of thanksgiving. And it's always directed towards God with varying degrees of force. But there's always something. It's a vector. I told a story there a while back when we came back from vacation. I kind of went partway through it, and I didn't really finish the story. But I'm going to finish the story. I'm going to tell it again and finish it and tell you maybe some lessons that we may or may not have learned. I think the future is yet to tell us. What happened? We were getting ready to go, and I packed that very van there that I drew with my own hands, with tools, a toolbox, with every conceivable tool that I thought I might need. And I'd done an awful lot of work on the van before we set out. And it had new oil, and it had a new filter, and all the tires were freshly charged up, and I checked all the other fluids, and I changed some parts, and the rear springs, not the springs, but the shocks, so because our van had been doing this after you come to a stop, right? So I changed those, so it was nice and tight. And I thought, we're good. I mean, I know this van has 300,000 kilometers plus on it, probably mostly because of Trevor. But it's in good shape. And you know what? For most of the trip, it was in pretty good shape. We actually got really good gas mileage, considering we were pulling a trailer. But we were doing okay, and we were having a good time. But before we went out, we prayed. Before we left the driveway, we prayed. And I said, one of the things in my prayer, of course, was that the Lord would have his hand on this van and that it would not break down. Because unspoken in my heart was the worst thing that can possibly happen on this trip is if I am left standing with a van full of stuff in my family on the side of the road, and there's nothing I can do to fix whatever is wrong with it. That'd be the worst possible thing. And I took that fear, and I pushed it right down because I had a prayer and a toolbox. Washington, midway between Spokane and Seattle. The van starts shaking violently, and we pull over, and upon inspection, I notice that Amy's wheel out of the five lug nuts that are supposed to be holding the wheel on, one is left. So there was a brief moment of thanksgiving, very brief, where I was thankful that it hadn't departed as well. But then that fear came up and enveloped me. Now, to make a long story short, we limped our way over to a service station, and Amy had been in contact with some friends that we had been going to see, which at that point were about an hour away, just a little bit more than an hour, a heaping hour away from where we were. And when she told them, they texted back and they said, well, once you get yourself sorted out, you know, with the van and everything, we'll come and get you. Now, at that point, I was thinking what perhaps a lot of people would be thinking. That is too much to ask. Right? That is a lot to ask, because not only are they coming an hour, a heaping hour, to come and get us, but they're going to, we had unhitched our trailer, they're going to be towing that, they're going to pack all our stuff into their vehicle, and then they're going to drive another heaping hour back. And then, at the end of all that, come Monday, because this was the day before July 4th. You know what Americans do on the day before July 4th? to get ready for July 4th. They don't do anything else, really. So there's no shops or anything open. But then, so Monday, this was, July 4th, it was a Friday this year. So nothing was going to be open until Monday. And so on Monday, they'd have to drive us all the way back with all our stuff, a heaping hour. And then, of course, they'd have to go home. 4 hours of driving. And I did the calculations really quick. I'm good that way. And I thought, that is too much to ask. But the thing was, and this is where God starts pummeling me. He says, you didn't ask. You didn't ask that. They offered. Now what are you going to do? What if it was you in that position? What if I had the opportunity to help out a friend coming to visit me? And they were beyond Thessalon somewhere, and they broke down. What would I do? I would be okay. I would probably offer the same thing. No problem. We'll go and get you. You can come stay with us. Stay as long as you like. And that's where things start to get interesting in there, right? Why is it that for a lot of us, we're very willing, we're very generous. We actually are quite generous. We're good with our time. We're good with our money. But when it comes to receiving those things, all of a sudden it gets kind of difficult, especially when what is being received is of great value, right? That 4 hours out of their life and time on the road, I perceived it as great value. That is, it's valuable. And the higher the stakes, the harder it gets to receive that. There is a sacrifice in the Old Testament where the high priest would kill an animal on the Day of Atonement. And he would bring the blood into the temple and he'd sprinkle it on the altar. And it was to make atonement for the sins of all the people. And that happened once a year. But the body and bones, what was left of this particular animal, it was brought outside the camp and it was burned there. So now you have this picture, right? Sacrifice, the blood was important, but the body, what was left, it got burned outside the camp, as if it was of no use. In Hebrews, the writer of the Hebrews, he's talking about this. And he's saying, we have an altar at which nobody else can eat. And Jesus is that lamb, that animal, whose blood was used to atone. And then he was brought outside the camp. Literally, he was sacrificed outside the city walls, right? And the writer of Hebrews is making this connection. And he says, now what we need to do is we have to go outside the camp with Jesus. We're not sticking around by the altar and enjoying the atonement. We ourselves have to go outside the camp and suffer the same humiliation with Jesus. That's an interesting picture. And then he goes on to say, through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise. That is, the fruit of lips that openly profess his name. That's an interesting phrase. Sacrifice of praise. how can praise be a sacrifice? That's not a very usual word. Usually when we feel like we're praising someone, like, Joni, you did a good job. What did I just sacrifice right there? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I sacrificed anything. Like a good word, everybody's supposed to build everybody else up, right? But how is that a sacrifice? Well, it goes back to this Hebrew word, todah. The word from which todah comes is the word for hand. In Hebrew, this is a yad. This is your yad. The act of praising someone is yada. Yada. So it's using the hands to give praise. And then a slight difference on that is this word, todah, which is not just praise, but it involves giving thanks as well. In Leviticus, there's this offering that is described, and it's a voluntary offering where you don't have to make it if you don't want to. But you take bread in a certain way, and you offer it. And it's in response to something good that God has done for you. And quite often, it's in response to a prayer that you've cried out to God. You were in trouble in some way. You had an issue. And you cried out to God. You lamented. You told God, this is my issue. Look upon how I'm suffering right now. This is how I'm feeling about it. And by the way, this is not sacrilege, because the Psalms, the Bible, is full of these kinds of prayers. This cry out to God, this lament. And it's bringing attention to the issue. And it's like talk therapy, where you get it out, right? You talk to God about how you're feeling about this. Job was quite good at this. He just spilled his guts out to God exactly how he was feeling. And he had a lot of feeling, right? There was a lot to feel, because there was a lot going on in Job's life. And we have those times. We have times where there's a lot going on, and we need to get it out. There's a direction for that. God. And you can put it all there. And you can lament. And you can say, why aren't you doing anything about this? You can say that. You can question. You can get it out. And then, what the Bible usually describes is at some point after this, and it might not be right away, but at some point, the faithfulness of God shines through. The faithfulness of God returns upon the lamenter. And the faithfulness of God fills up a life with whatever was lacking. Note that whatever was lacking might not have been what the lamenter thought was lacking. Understand? If I feel like I need more money, and God comes back and he gives me more children, that is a blessing, believe it or not, because God, being the faithful one that he is, always gives us exactly what we need. And at the point where you realize that, then you turn around and you offer, in the Old Testament, you would have offered this todah. You offer the todah. And it's a sacrifice of praise. We have a hard time receiving things. But when we received, when I decided on that roadway, the Chevron, I said, okay, tell them to come. They came, and we were blessed. We had a great time with that family. It was hot, but they had a pool. And we just had a really, really good time. We shared with each other. They shared their food. We shared each other's experiences, and they brought us back. We were blessed by that. It turned out to be a good thing. Not only that, but it's affected our lives in ways that had I put my hands out with the palms out and said, no, we'll forget or whatever. Too, I'm sure, but not positively in the way accepting this gift that these friends were able to give would have. But it's hard for us to accept things. There's this book that I'm reading where the main character, he's in a struggle, and he's under the thumb of oppression, some pretty severe oppression. And it could be a picture of any of our societies, really, where there's been a dictatorship or an oppressive environment, and then there's people that are being ground under the heel. And he, through an event in the story, is bent on vengeance. Now, I'm not saying that vengeance is... He's striving to lift himself out of his situation and work his way into a position where he can overthrow. So much. And he says, freedom costs too much. It's too much. Freedom is there. You can see it, right? You can. But what's it cost? What does it cost? We have here that humans listen, freedom is available through Jesus Christ. And his blood... That's good news, right? That's the gospel. But the problem that's too much to ask.